If you're a Kevin Smith fan, this is how many dicks your girlfriend sucked on the way through the parking lot. But on Ching. Okay, if you don't know that, go watch Clerks. Anyway, I'm your host, Matt, and with me today is my guest co-host,
Cody.
Cody Grady, who is on, what were you on? I was talking about Gen Con.
Yeah, men who go to Gen Con and the women who love them.
Good title. Ambrosia's right now hanging out, apparently with my wife in the kitchen, so not to be sexist. Sorry. They just giggled that.
They did.
Cody here was, for at least a year, the nerd I strove to be. I would hear stories from Ambrosia about his comic collecting habits and the things that he's into, and I'm like, I want to know this man. And now he's in my living room recording a podcast. Hooray!
It's fantastic.
Very exciting to have you here, sir. So we'll have our meat and potatoes later on, our big story of the week. But right now, I want to try out a new segment. Now, back in December was our last episode with my co-host Dustin, and I've since decided to cut some of the segments that I felt were more his.
Right.
He did a thing called Discount X-Men. Hilarious.
Mm-hmm. Very good.
Love doing it. Without him here, I just can't do it. I really can't. So we brought up Geek Movie of the Week. And I also want to bring up what I'm buying. What am I buying out there in comic book land? So, this week, I went to pick up my holds over at Downtown Comics West, here at West 10th Street, Indianapolis, Indiana. I got, Scott Snyder and Greg Capullo's Batman. Mm-hmm. What issue are they at? 27? 27. Yeah. All right. Picked that up. I haven't read it yet, though, so that one's still waiting. How's that running? Have you been reading that one?
Oh, I love it. It's fantastic.
Are you up to date?
The 27th issue is sitting on my stack right now. I was reading for our show today, so I'm a couple of weeks behind on my reading.
Because the
27th issue of Detective was the first issue where Batman appeared.
Yes.
So that's why it's the expensive, what was it, like $9.99 issue or whatever. It's like 140 pages. It's quite a tome for a comic, so...
Nice.
It looks to be good, and I think they're kicking off... I saw that Batgirl this week was advertising Gothtopia, and they've pretty much been letting Scott Snyder do it all over at, over at DC these days when it comes to Batman.
That guy is touched by something.
Oh, he's fantastic. Anything you read by him.
Have you listened to his interviews with Kevin Smith on Fat Man on Batman?
Yes. Yes, that guy.
It's just something is firing in that guy's brain that if I could see it happen, it'd just be amazing.
Oh, he puts his name on anything. If you haven't read, I think they just came out with the first trade. He's doing a short with, of course, now that we're recording, I'm going to go, oh, I don't remember who it is. He's doing a thing over at Vertigo called The Wake.
Mm-hmm.
It's a little bit like Sphere, but with like large jumps in time travel. And
less squids.
Oh, no, lots of... Not squids per se, but weird, creepy, crazy things underwater and eating people and people exploring and stuff.
Damn squids off my motherfucking submarine.
Close enough.
Sorry.
I appreciate you trying.
That's a quip from an upcoming Follow Network's comic book I'm writing called The Council of Sams, so you'll look for that in a newsstand near you.
Yeah, he's fantastic, so I'm sure it's a great issue.
He is something else, that guy. And Greg Capullo, an amazing backstory, too, as an artist.
Yeah.
His episode of Fat Man on Batman was astounding. Like, sometimes I start listening to these, and I'm like, I don't know who Scott Snyder is. And then I'm like, oh, it's the guy that writes Batman! Fuck me running! I mean, what has he done? He's done The Court of Owls, Mirror Mirror.
Yeah, Mirror was great. Yeah, Detective Comics before the New 52.
Yeah, he did Black Mask? Something with Black Mask. I don't know if it was a Black Mask-headed title.
And then, of course, the latest crossover was Death of the Family.
Death of the Family, yes, in which we lost our second Robin.
Spoiler alert.
Whatever. You're all over it. Jason Todd's back, so I'm sure Damian Wayne will come around someday.
Yeah.
You'll see. As a matter of fact, we'll see when Natalie gets on my Stash Comics, or StashMyComics.com, and loads up my, I have a pristine four book set of the Death of the Family.
Yeah.
When Jason Todd was killed by the Joker. So
I say, Death in the Family is just a fantastic series, and those are worth a nice chunk of change. I love the Mignola covers. Most people hate Mignola, but
I no problem with it. No problem. Yeah. Next to Kelly. Kelly's my favorite from the whole Fuck Beans, from the whole Nightfall series.
Yeah,
his covers were startling.
Mm-hmm.
Those tall ears. Yeah. Batman looked vampiric. He was scary as shit. Yeah. So, it's not a guy with a broken back.
No.
It's a scary fucking vampire, man. Oh, yeah. Okay, so we got the Batman. I'm currently have Batman on my pull list. I also have the Ultimate Comics. I have all four of their titles right now because it would seem that they're closing up the universe.
Yeah.
So, I don't know for sure. We'll see. So, right now they have Ultimate Comics Spider-Man, Ultimate Comic The Ultimates or The Avengers, Ultimate Comics X-Men, and then Ultimate Comics Cataclysm, which is the name of the overarching story, which is the Marvel 6 what are we in? 616?
Yeah, 616.
Marvel 616's Galactus has crossed over into the Ultimates world. They had their own version of Galactus. They defeated him. But it turns out they got something bigger and better coming their way, so let's see what kind of damage 616 can do to this Ultimate Universe.
I was saying, I don't know if they're going to tie it in with New Avengers or not, but I know in New Avengers right now by Hickman, they're doing this whole universes collapsing on universes, and it's the Earths, like, from the different universes pass over each other for, like, an eight-hour period, and they're, like, in some sort of conjunction happening, and people are jumping back and forth, and the thing is either the Earth you're on will be destroyed as well as that entire universe, or that Earth from the other universe will be entirely destroyed, or both of them will get wiped out. And it's this whole, like,
that's so fun
because
you can tie in so many interesting things. Marvel 1602, yeah. A great storyline, a super fun, interesting storyline that I used to use as a teaching tool. We're talking about the colonization of America in my history class. Super fun to tie that into modern Marvel. That'd be amazing. I would love to see that. I would pay $2.99 an issue to see that. Maybe $3.99. I don't know. All right, and then the last one right now on my pull list is Walking Dead. We are in the war with Negan. So it is a bi-weekly book. We're getting every 2 weeks we get a new book instead of monthly. So poor Robert Kirkman is probably right until his fingers bleed between that and, you know, the number one show in America. Mm-hmm. So we're on issue 119, I think I got this week. A beautiful use of zombies as bioterrorism, or as a biological weapon. Really fun. You know, if you... spoilers. Fast forward 55 seconds if you haven't read 119 yet. Well, here's what you do. Have a prisoner exchange with your enemy.
Right.
And you have bags over the heads when they're prisoners. So it could be a zombie, you don't know.
Nice.
So you send a zombie back. They're like, oh, Denise, I'm so glad you're back. Ah! And then there's biters everywhere, and it's insane. Mass hysteria. Dogs and cats laying together. Crazy.
Apocalypse.
Very fun. So that's what I'm reading right now. And stay tuned next week for what I'm reading, you know, now. So, there you go. Geek movie. What's our geek movie, sir?
Our geek movie that we chose is Donnie Darko.
Donnie Darko. Just out of a 10-minute conversation with Cody, what have you been watching lately? What has crept up on your radar? What's some of your favorite geek movies? Donnie Darko came into the mix. So, Donnie Darko. What? Okay, hopefully you've seen this, and if you haven't, fuck yourself, because you're an idiot. Donnie Darko. really the first time Jake Gyllenhaal came on the scene for me.
Right, yeah.
The movie also has Patrick Swayze, may he rest in peace, Noah Wiley from ER, Drew Barrymore.
Mm-hmm.
There's some real random show-ups, like, oh, yeah. You know, they were in this movie. Wow, okay.
Yeah.
What What has attracted you to Donnie Darko over the years? Because the movie came out in, what, 98?
I was going to say.
You get yakking, yeah, I'll look it up. Yeah.
I want to say it was right around, because I remember seeing it in high school, so maybe 2000, 2003, 90, somewhere in that, you know, Y2K era.
2001.
There we go. All right. What I love about Donnie Darko is that, I don't know if I mentioned this in the last podcast or not, my education is in theater, so storytelling, you know, writing, all that stuff is in my background. So, as my wife can tell you, she thinks I'm a genius just because stories are, you know, so predictable, that you start a show and you can begin to see what's happening. When I sit there and have the moment of, what is going on? Like, I literally, everything goes blank for a second. I'm just like, I have no clue what is happening. A movie that does that to me will always be my favorite movie. And Donnie Darko was like one of those first cult classics that I saw, and I was just like, what is going on? Things are coming out of their chest. He's going back and forth in time. There's this 8-foot-tall bunny. It's got a hole in its eye. There's this creepy woman writing books about time travel. Like, it just makes no sense.
There's a very right-wing agenda, like, subtly put in. And it had Maggie Gyllenhaal as well. I think that was interesting. To tie him in as real sister and brother.
Yeah.
Very interesting story about a young man who narrowly escapes death through a sleeping disorder. And comes to find out, it would seem that fate of the universe, he should have died in that accident, and he became a pseudo-time traveler.
Right, yeah, yeah.
And was able to understand where his life was going and why it needed to end at that juncture.
Right.
And he was able to go back in time and allow himself to die, and the world kept going.
Correct, yeah.
But what the fuck? They do it in the most abstract goddamn way. Like, you ever watch... was that old Jimmy Stewart movie with the Harvey, the rabbit?
Yeah.
He's got the 6-foot-tall invisible bunny?
Yeah.
This is like that on acid. This is so fucked. They have wormholes coming out of their hearts and expanding, let's say, 20 seconds into their future.
Yeah.
So you can see a person's path as they're walking along throughout the earth.
It's a complete, just total mind-bending, you know, destroying thing. Because you sit there and you go, I don't have a clue what's going on. And the thing is it's not... You can make the argument over whether you don't have a clue what's going on because it's terrible, or you don't have a clue what's going on because it's brilliant and they're thinking on another level. And I love movies where you can have that argument, because I will defend certain movies to say, oh no, they're brilliant, you just don't get it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, or you can be like, well, they went about this in a really horrible way.
There's a perfect analogy for that in the movie, in which Donnie Darko is explaining to his friends the biological background of the Smurfs.
Yes.
Saying that Smurfs, because there's only one lady Smurf, and she was created by Gargamel, that they are an asexual grouping, and not necessarily can be classified as mammals or reptiles or fungus or whatever.
Yeah.
Listen to that little diatribe by him. That's an analogy for the entire movie. It's fucked.
It is.
His analogy is fucked, the story is fucked, and it's so interesting.
Now, as I was telling you before, it's... I was going to say, if I'm wrong about this, I'm sure that you'll get emails. But it's my understanding. So, to be fair, I've seen this movie twice, which for me is a lot. Because once I know the path of the story, rewatching it again for me is, unless I really love it, really lame.
A dozen times.
I say, I know that there is a... I remember when I watched it on VHS back when it first came out. So we're talking like 2001, 2002, you know, somewhere in there. It's just a total, you know, destruction of your mind because you don't understand what's going on. These things are coming out of people's chests. We're jumping back and forth in time. We got things written on people's arms. We have no clue what's really going on. Now, I went to introduce this film to my wife when we were in college, and I went out and I bought the director's cut. And so we watched the director's cut because I'm like, if I sit through this movie again, even though I haven't seen it in 8 years, I still know where it's going. It's not going to be enjoyable. So I'm like, I'll just go ahead and watch the director's cut. You know, she'll get this little insight. And there are all these sections that either were taken out on the, you know, on the cutting room floor or maybe were added in later that explain the movie as it goes. So before you see the scene where, you know, the little invisible trails are showing them their future 20 seconds from now, you hear the old woman that you haven't met yet reading the part of her book that you don't know about yet, like explaining it to you. You're almost like seeing the tome of the spell book, and it's like saying, time travelers will experience these strange phenomena, such as being able to see the path of the future. And so it had it been that way, it probably, in my opinion, wouldn't have been a cult classic, because you lose that mind-bendiness. But yeah, they cut it out. Or
yeah, you cut that out, and the movie that we had goes from, wow, goes from that trippiness to like, oh, everything's explained.
Exactly.
It's, yeah, the last episode of Lost was not that crazy.
Exactly.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah, you know, Martin Scorsese says that there should never be a director's cut. The movie that you put out is the movie.
Right.
Everything else gets erased.
But and again, I haven't seen that director's cut for 6-7 years now, so it's, my knowledge of this film is probably not as good as it should be to be talking about it to people, but that's the way I recall it, is that it starts explaining it. It's like, this is a totally different film.
I have to check this out sometime.
Normally you see the extra 5 minutes and you're like, wait, where was that? And you look it up online like, oh, there were 30 extra seconds at this bar scene, or we saw some guy get punched in the background, but like, it makes it a totally different film.
I love that idea. I'm going to have to check this out. You know, they made a sequel of it a few years back.
It's supposed to be Samantha Darko, maybe?
Yeah, it's like his, yeah.
It's his sister?
Yeah,
I don't know.
Sequel.
You can tell that I have not seen
S. Darko.
Yes, that's
what it is. Centers on Sam, Donnie's younger sister. Sam begins to have strange dreams that hint at a major catastrophe. Donnie Darko creator Richard Kelly has stated that he has no involvement in the sequel as he does not own the rights to the original. Chase and producer Adam Fields are the only creative links between it and the original film. Oh, that sucks.
Yeah, as I say,
there's no information in there at all.
As I say, the buddy that I watched it with, he was like, oh, a sequel came out, and he was the one who introduced it, and I remember having, you know, at the, you know, brilliant age of 14 or 15, like this, you know, philosophical discussion of life and meaning and what do you do with your life. And so I was like, oh, we should watch S. Darko because it's going to be great. He's like, no, just don't bother. Just don't watch it.
I loved when this movie came out and it hit big on video. I mean, it was like made for like a $4 million budget. And I think it theatrically made $7.9 million. So it was a success
right.
for an independent film. And then the DVD release of it was huge.
Right.
Everybody loves it. They did, I remember the Indiana Statesman at Indiana State, the newspaper, did the top 10 bunnies for Easter. And what's the bunny's name in this?
Frank.
Frank. Frank the Rabbit was definitely on the list. And so it would be like Usagi Yojimbo from Ninja Turtles. And like, just fucking any amalgamation of a bunny, Bugs Bunny and what have you. And there was Frank.
I'm saying, I can't imagine that there are a whole bunch of, like, you know.
They must have not had much to draw from. You ever seen Night of the Lepus?
No.
Lepus is like Latin for rabbit. Mm. And so Night of the Lepus is about in the Southwest where they did nuclear testing.
Mm-hmm.
It made the bunnies grow giant and they craved human flesh.
Hmm.
And so they built like these giant model towns of human settlements and then like put regular rabbits in them. So nice. They're like jumping over the buildings and eating little people figures. So funny. So fucking funny. Thank you, Hollywood, for your subterfuge. Let's go to the verses.
Right.
This week, again, just through a conversation, we came up with two. What were they?
Okay, we're going with sort of a tag team or a 2v2 here, based solely on what I've been watching. We've got Sherlock Holmes and Watson, the Cumberbatch and Freeman version, versus, Fox Mulder and Dana Scully from The X-Files.
And so this was like, I was just trying to probe questions here to my good friend Cody and ask, like, what have you been watching lately? And, you know, what kind of verses would you like to see? And he's like, well, I've been watching Sherlock a lot lately. And I was like, okay, cool. I just saw Desolation of Smog with Freeman and Cumberbatch in a weird, really dichotomous role from Sherlock.
No kidding.
And he said, well, and, you know, we rewatched X-Files recently. And I'm, oh. But boom. Two detectives, two sidekicks that are medical doctors. I mean, is The X-Files not the perfect retelling of Sir Arthur Conan Doyle's Sherlock Holmes in the modern era?
Oh, they're clearly drawing on the same, you know, types of characters,
God,
the same archetypes.
They're written on the same typewriter, written with the same pencil, whatever. These are connected. So let's have them fight to the death. Last week, and you haven't heard it yet, Cody, because it has been released, was The Ninja Turtles versus the A-Team.
Oh,
round
boy.
Robin fight on the Muppet Studios.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, so check that one out, guys. If this is your first episode, go back and download the last one on iTunes. Or check it out at www.followthe.tv. And click like and subscribe and all that fun shit. Now, where are we fighting at? What did Ambrosia pick?
Oh, my wife you know, she's more of a nerdy novice. She's working her way up to adept, but
she's a journeyman.
Correct. So Matt was asking her what she's been watching today, and with the exception of football, he hit on the fact that she was watching Game Show Network and Guy Fieri and Minute to Win It. So apparently these two are going to be fighting out on the Minute to Win It stage.
With Guy Fieri trying to, let's just say he's trying to call the plays.
The play-by-play man, yeah. The color commentator.
Yeah, there you go. Guy Fieri, who gave a glowing recommendation to the west side of Indianapolis' very own tamale place. May I suggest you all check it out? Tamales take 18 hours to make, so you can imagine going to a restaurant where what you're ordering was being made at 6 in the morning. It's astounding.
It's good
the
food.
The best food ever. Mm-hmm. Check it out. I don't know where to start. Can you give me a little background on Sherlock? I haven't watched the Cumberbatch series.
I say,
my Cumberbatch-ness is limited to I am Khan, and then I am Death Flying.
Right.
Smaug.
Let's say, he's the...
I'm sorry. I gotta interrupt you. Now I think about this. We just went and watched The Desolation of Smaug yesterday, and the very last things Cumberbatch says is, I am flying. I am Death. And then I leaned over to Natalie and said, I am Khan! So, tell me about the Cumberbatch.
Okay, what I particularly like about it is that it's a modern adaptation, which, if you've seen CBS's Elementary, does not always go very well. I mean, taking him out of the Victorian era is very hard. So what, they've really done a good job. It's some of the same creative producers, actually, that work on Doctor Who.
Okay.
And they do a really good job of putting Sherlock as this sort of consulting detective. Watson, who's originally supposed to be injured in a war in one of the many British, you know, excursions into Africa, he's actually a wounded vet from Afghanistan.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of, and like I said, they do a good job of bringing in the 21st century. So Holmes is really, really good with laptops. He's always taking people's laptops. He's manipulating cell phone towers. He's, let's say, minor spoiler, because it's in the first few minutes of the very first episode. They're, you know, they're holding this press conference because there's been these very weird suicides going on. And, you know, the inspector's up there and he's talking about, you know, no, we don't think this is a, you know, we don't think this is a murder. We don't think these are connected. And all of a sudden, you know, all the press corps, bring, all their phones go off. And now look down, and the text message says wrong. Every single one of them got a text message that says wrong. He's like, ignore the text message, folks, and he's da-da-da-da-da-da, and like, we have everything well in hand. Bring, wrong. It's just kind of a...
Oh, my. Okay.
Very, very interesting.
So a very tech-savvy
yeah.
Sherlock. I like that idea.
Lots of video game maps and stuff kind of in it. Was it Minority Report, where they're sliding the things around in,
yeah.
in the air?
Yeah.
You see him do a lot of that. He'll close his eyes, and the screen will kind of black out the area around him, and he's flipping things around and throwing things up.
And
as
it's
you
just
see
all
his
in his own head.
Yeah, it's him trying to put the pieces together.
When you can properly display a character's inner thinking style... That's an amazing thing. Like, if you watch Silence of the Lambs and The Red Dragon and Hannibal Rising, they're good movies, but Hannibal Lecter is the bad guy. If you read the books, Hannibal Lecter is an amazing character. Like, you want to be Hannibal Lecter when you read the books, because you can see inside of his mind. So I like that they're doing a visual of that. That's
yeah,
great.
Yeah, it's very visual. I mean, there's a part where they there's a chase through London, and the car that they're chasing hops in, drives away, and they have to start jumping around, and all of a sudden you see this mini-map, you know, almost like GTA style in his head as he's calculating, okay, to go
there's
through
three
here.
Three stars come up in a tank.
They say, you know, he's got to go this way, so we've got to jump over this building and up this ladder and go across, and that's gonna. He's got to stop here. It's a one-way, and it takes 30 seconds for this light, and then all of a sudden, you know, he... jumps right out, bang, slams, stops right in front of the car, and they're like, we've been driving for like 4 miles. How did Holmes catch us? But he knew, you know, he could see it all in his head, and they're depicting it, as opposed to, well, like you were talking about the Guy Ritchie films. Sort of like the scene where he shows up and he's just wearing the hat, that kind of thing. Like, you go back and you see how he actually does it. Really.
Oh my god, the Guy Ritchie films. Let's save that for a little bit later, because those things are astounding.
Oh, they're great.
Those are works of art. Okay, so we got Sherlock and Dr. John Watson versus... I can't remember their real names now. I remember their real names, but I mean like...
Fox Mulder and Dana Scully.
Fox Mulder, Dana Scully. Fox Mulder. Okay.
Scully and Mulder.
Fox was not just the network it was on. Got it. Now, I like to liken the X-Files as the modern Marvel's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. is just a retelling, conspiracy theory, superpowers, craziness, aliens. It's X-Files on ABC. It's all it is. X-Files by Disney. And we're a big fan of that here. And so you check it out on Thursdays at the Rancor's Agents of Brothel. Anyway, let's talk.
Now, do we pick sides here? Or are we going to forum style?
Try to go as clean slate as you can.
Gotcha.
Tabula rasa. Where are we fighting at? What was
the
it?
Minute to Win It stage.
That's right. Okay. So we got a lot of black light.
Yeah.
We have the, it's almost like an octagon, the stage.
Yeah, say it's basically like a coliseum. It's a big open spot in the center with seats like three quarters of the way around. Yeah.
With Guy Fieri with a goofy microphone. There's probably silly props like ping pong balls and Vaseline, spoons, there's some toothpicks and corks over here.
Yeah.
Not a lot of things to use as weapons.
No, not at all.
Although Sherlock could probably do a bullseye from Marvel and just be like toothpicks. Fling, fling, fling. Exactly. Because he's so good at whatever he does. God. Okay. Everybody, all four of them are on the center stage. Okay. They wake up at the same time. All
right.
Let's do the inner monologues.
All right.
John Watson. This is completely illogical. How did we end up here? Who drugged us? What happened?
Fair. All okay. right. I can see that.
Dana Scully. This is completely illogical. We were drugged. How did we wake up here?
Right.
Okay. Fox Mulder. What the fuck? We teleported! We must have fucking teleported, right? Sherlock Holmes. What the fuck? How did we get here? This is odd. So already, who's the paranoid one of the bunch?
Oh, well, that's... See, the thing is that at least the way that I've always seen the characters, well, Sherlock already knows where they are. Like, he already has it all figured out. He's already figured out who slipped him the drug. He probably will later say that he took it intentionally to see what was going on. So he's probably well prepared. Say,
and do you not dispute that Sherlock has used logic to go through and figure out what is the most logical place he could be, and Fox Mulder has gone the reverse? Found the most illogical place that he could be, or the most illogical reason to be there, because he always goes for like the minuscule. He's like, if it doesn't look to be true, it's probably true. He's the anti Occam's razor.
Yeah, I think that in a way. I mean, he does. I mean, when you watch his old shows, he does say, okay, it could be this, but keep in mind that this doesn't make sense because of these things. Because there's always that weird little twitch, and he does focus on that odd part of the case.
He does.
Which is interesting because that's sort of the same thing that Sherlock Holmes does. I mean,
but Sherlock Holmes is a big picture kind of guy.
But anything that doesn't fit the picture, that's what he's going to focus on. I say because you see, you know, of course I can't think of any actual Sherlock Holmes tales to come to mind at the moment, but it's always like little things like, where's the bell pull? Or why isn't there a candlestick in that middle thing? You know, he notices those little things in kind of the same way that Mulder does. But you're right, you are taking it from maybe a logic, a logos, as opposed to sort of the pathos approach, the, you know, the psychological approach that Mulder might take.
That is, wow, that great terminology. That's really deep.
Stay in school, kids.
Understand that, yeah. That's total logos. Did Joe shit himself? That is my question, yes? All right.
You're just now hearing it. Joe shit himself. Moving on.
Shit. Logos pathos thing totally messes up my argument. Because in my world, logic always wins, right? I'm assuming most people are the same way.
Yeah, I think you'd be surprised.
You might act towards the pathos and the athos, or even mythos.
Yeah.
But logos is what's going to win the day 99% of the time.
Right.
So.
But I would argue that both Mulder and Holmes are the most logical, the most logos-based of the character.
As members of Scotland Yard in the modern era, does Sherlock and Watson carry guns?
Sherlock, not so much, but I don't think he's against it. Watson is actually displayed, I was just saying, because he's supposed to be
an
Afghan
guy.
Yeah, he's a veteran from Afghanistan. He's shown in that show taking some people out, so okay. He's pretty accurate. He's by far the most experienced, you know,
they
gunslinger.
Wake up and have their same thoughts that we just said earlier. I really picture, honestly, Scully and Watson drawing their weapons immediately, pointing them at each other.
That's fair. I could see that. Yeah.
Now, what occurs? What are your thoughts?
See, I think so. If you've got sort of the Mexican standoff, as it were, between those two, it's the other two characters who are probably going to speak first.
Oh yeah.
Let's say Mulder is always about trying to save the individual. I mean, he's always about, you know, what's going on? How are we here?
Who's the real victim here?
Right. Let's figure it out. What's the problem? Let's, you know, solve the case, as it were. Whereas I think Holmes doing his thing, Sherlock's going to ignore everybody else and everything that's going on, drawn weapons, all that. He's going to take that in a moment and try and figure out what they're doing on this stage. What are they going to do? How do we get out? What's the problem? So I think the conversation between those two and how it goes, I think, is going to decide whether or not people are going to get shot.
This is like third level Inception deep. I don't know. I don't know where this shit goes.
Me either.
Wow.
Not to mention, you say you have Guy Fieri standing off at the side going,
yeah,
and then it's like, and they're awake.
Guy Fieri's arms are up. They're awake. 30 seconds. Go.
As I say, there you go. You've got the minute to win it. You've got the 60 seconds. So what do you do in that 60 seconds?
Oh shit, dude. Like, I don't like doing this on here, but that's almost a draw. Like, besides having David S. Goyer and fucking, I don't know, Aaron Spelling sit down and write something out, how does that? You can't do this.
Yeah, it's hard. This was not a, when you first decided this was what it was going to be, it's like,
so this would be great. They're both like Sherlock Holmes. I mean, one of them is, but this will work perfectly. We can do this. And now it's like, fuck.
What'd you say? I don't know.
One of them needs to have superpowers. That's how this works.
So we need to have something to debate there. I would think that the soldier's instinct would probably override the FBI agent as far as who would shoot first. I mean, the shoot first and ask questions later.
Do you think Watson would shoot?
I would say Watson would definitely shoot, but I think there has to be. I don't think either of those two groups would shoot first and ask questions later kind of thing. There'd have to be an impetus for the violence.
It's the three horsemen. The three lone gunmen. They show up. Boom! Fox Mulder, we have a theory! And then, ba-boom, Watson fires two right into Scully's skull and right into Foxy's fox. I got nothing. I don't know how this ends. Okay, listeners, take it to the Rancor's Brothel page on Facebook. Who would win in a fight? Mulder and Scully versus Sherlock and Watson from the modern era.
We want details, people.
Yeah, because I really don't know what the fuck to do here. So you tell us, okay? Thank you. All right, Mr. Cody, now it is time to discuss our meat and potatoes of the week, Dragonlance. Since this show started in February of 2013, this is something that I have wanted to do, to the point that I took my original three novels of the over 100 titles in Dragonlance and loaned them to Dustin, who is no longer with the show, and yet still has my three motherfucking books. Dustin, return them. Dragonlance has always had a special place in my heart. It was my... I've always been a fantasy sci-fi kind of guy.
Mm-hmm.
This turned the page for me. This just drove me directly into it. Head on. Crash collision. There was no turning back.
Gotcha. Okay.
It started with Christmas of 1994. My cousins, Anthony and Natasha Cumby, and their mom Jill, gave me a book called The Legend of Huma, written by Richard A. Knack. And I had never heard of Dragonlance before. I wasn't a D&D player. I didn't know this kind of a depth in fantasy world. I was Star Wars and Star Trek and that kind of shit. Mm-hmm. I always liked dragons. Thought they were beautiful. Amazing idea. But I wasn't this deep into it. They gave me this book for Christmas. And eventually, about a year later, I read it. I was like, what is this Dragonlance world of which you speak? What is this Kryn? K-R-Y-N-N is the world of Dragonlance. And so I went to school after I finally read the book and was talking to some friends, and they had read them too, and they had what was called the Dragonlance Chronicles. And they had it in one big volume.
Yeah.
So it was three books compressed into one. Here, Matt, you can borrow it. Thank you, Brandon Snyder and Mark Daniels from 1995. Bless your hearts. I absorbed it like Jesus Christ was giving me the word of the gospel, okay? This was my world. It's a Dungeons & Dragons campaign setting,
right,
set to a fictional storyline.
Mm-hmm.
So you aren't necessarily rolling the dice and being Tanis Half-Elven, but you're reading everything about him.
Yeah.
You're getting more than you get from the role-playing game, because you get to read the inner thinkings and what line of logic the character is using when they make the decision. You're getting everything from every player in your game.
Yeah.
But you're getting it in a novelized form.
Mm-hmm.
My God, I was hooked. Here it is, what? So that was 95. It's now 2014, almost 20 years later. I am still buying and reading these goddamn books for fucking teenagers. Margaret Weiss and Tracy Hickman are some kind of gods to me. Hickman has been writing Batman stories recently.
Wrote a novelization of Batman.
Yeah. They've done other series together. I can't get into any of them. I need these two writers on Dragonlance. This is my world. And they've done some beautiful things with it. They have written maybe, let's say, I'll count later, but maybe 12 novels total in the Dragonlance world that have spawned an expanded universe of over 100 novels.
Yeah.
Sometimes when I'm reading them, I see continuity issues.
Yeah.
Maybe one short story, an elf has a beard. Elves don't grow beards. This is bullshit! There's no truth in this! But I have been addicted to the point that yearly I reread Dragons of Autumn Twilight, Dragons of Winter Night, and Dragons of Spring Dawning every year for the past 19 years. Which is why, Dustin, I really need those books back. Please return them as soon as possible. Thank you. Where do you come into this, Cody?
Well, I say I'm almost the exact opposite tack from you. I would say because I come into it from the gamer's perspective. I mean, I've been Wizards of the Coast stuff has been on my shelves for years. I mean, I bought my first D&D books, I think, when I was in. I bought them off of Amazon back when Amazon was new, so I might have been in the sixth grade. Yes, actually, it was dial-up. We ordered them off dial-up. So I come into it from the tack of these are supplements to my own games, these are supplements to my own stories. To me, I see it very much as sort of as you described it. It's like somebody sat down, played a game, and then turned around and wrote what the game was. It's not, it's not necessarily like this long, drawn-out epic. I mean, it's a very long and convoluted and fascinating story, but not in the same way that, like, I'm trying to think of anything that, like a Game of Thrones type thing, or Lord of the Rings, you know? They're just kind of fun, light fantasy novels. And, I mean, Weiss and Hickman, there are a number of groups of these. I always call them my trashy fiction writers, because it seems like you go into the bookstore and they've got these old paperbacks, you know, and dozens of them on the shelves for like a couple bucks at half-price books. And to me, they're nice, fun, airy reads, and they remind me of my own gaming. But for me to get, especially the Dragonlance world, because the Dragonlance novels are like, what, 84, 85, the original 84. Chronicles? And, I started doing gaming in like the late 90s, probably right around, you know, Y2K, somewhere in there. Mm-hmm. And then, so I didn't get into reading the novels until high school. So we're talking, you know, 2003, 2004, before I even start reading stuff like that. And everyone then was Salvatore and Forgotten Realms from 3E as opposed to, Dragonlance, which was much more AD&D early 3E TSR stuff.
I graduated in 2000. I was probably on the end of the Dragonlance flare of that era. They had TSR. I remember one Christmas, so like in '95 when I read them all, and I was amazed. And I started getting them from the library and stuff, and reading them every day. So then it's the end of '96, almost '97, and I had asked for a bunch of titles for Christmas for Dragonlance, and my parents went to the bookstore, and the guy said, "We just don't have them." I said, "Why not?" And it was because Wizards of the Coast was buying TSR at the time.
Right, yeah.
And so they didn't have them yet. And so when they finally were able to order them and get them in, like a year later after Wizards of the Coast took over, I remember all the cover art was different from what I had been seeing in the bookstores.
Yeah.
So, and I had ordered the Meetings Sextet, so series of six books about the meetings of the heroes of the Dragonlance Chronicles.
Right.
And I'd gotten three of them for Christmas that year, and then three IOUs, bless their hearts, my parents. And so, like, when I finally got the three IOUs that they had went ahead and paid for that day at Borders, a year later, they were, like, completely different, different printings, you know?
Yeah.
So, very interesting. It's been fun to have them, like, finally come back for a period of time in the middle 2000s.
Yeah.
Now they're kind of passé again. Yeah. I'm still collecting. I still haven't read all of them. I know I've read most of them.
Yeah.
But not all of them.
I mean, it's just the in the fantasy literature, you know, sort of community, that, like I said, the D&D stories are all kind of, I mean, yeah, you get character death, you get violence, you get tragic things, but it's all kind of overall, you're completing a quest, it's kind of happy, it's not,
it's companionship and jovial spirits overall.
Exactly. I mean, you know, the Kender are always making things, you know, always, oh, we had a sad moment. Okay, here the Kender is going to do something, and we're going to, okay, the D&D group is happy again, you know, we're kind of bucking up the spirits and forging onward, even though the dwarf doesn't want to get on the boat, and, you know, that kind of stuff. It's not...
Flint, Fire, Forge. Like, here, okay, let me see here. I'm just going to run down some names.
All right.
Okay, from the Dragonlance universe, from the Chronicles.
Right.
We have Tanis Half-Elven.
Correct.
We have Caramon and Raistlin Majir.
Mm-hmm.
We have Tasselhoff Burfoot the Kender.
Correct.
Flint Fireforge the Dwarf.
Mm-hmm.
We have Goldmoon and Riverwind, the Plainsman, the High Plainsman.
Yeah.
We have Sturm. Oh, what's his last name? Sturm Brightblade. Sturm Brightblade from, he's a knight of Salamnia.
Yep.
Est Sularis Ulf Mythus. My honor is my life. Who am I missing here? We have some other people come in. We have Gilfanas and Lorlan Thalassa of the Qualinesti Elves.
Yep. What's her name?
Alhanna Starbreeze.
Yeah.
Of the Sylvanesti Elves.
Right.
Kitiara Uthmatar is Caramon and Raistlin's half sister.
Right.
She's a bad guy though. Shouldn't count. I think it's about it for the main characters.
Yeah.
I mean, like there's so much background information in this expanded universe that like even their religious system is explained ad nauseum to the point that there are 7 light gods, 7 dark gods, and 7 neutral gods.
Yeah.
I can literally name them all.
But it's so interesting because to me, it's like when I read it, it's like reading a rule book. Like that's the way you would balance it out. And when you build your party, it's like, oh, you've got thief character,
you've got a mage, we got a cleric.
Yeah, you've got it all balanced out, and it's just, I mean,
and it really is the perfect balanced team for D&D.
Right. No, and that's what they're trying to do. And you know, you see those. You can just tell by reading it, like, okay, we've gotten into this part where we're now attacked by 3 things. This is the part where, you know, the paladin and, you know, the barbarian and the warrior are going to step up and going to start beating some people down, and they're going to get back up from the wizard, and then everyone's going to run out the door kind of thing. So
here's the list of Dragonlance novels. Do you see this?
Oh, it's ridiculous. I looked it up the other day.
Redonkulous.
I say, because I, unlike you, I've not, like I said, I read them intermittently when I kind of in the mood to kind of experience that kind of literature. So I read the original Chronicles for this, so I didn't look like a complete idiot. I read all 3 of them in like the last 2 weeks. But what's weird is, so I read that, which is up at the top, obviously, because it's the first major trilogy. Mm-hmm. And then I've read War of the Souls, and that's about it.
War of the Souls?
Yeah, I've read those 3, and I've read the other trilogy.
So we have the Chronicles trilogy by Margaret Weiss and Tracy Hickman. Then we have, what's the trilogy called? It's the Twins. Look on here. I'll just find it right here. It is the Bitches. I want to say it was Tales.
I'll say you'll be out of my depth here. I'll say I know some of them, but not very many of them. I know that they did several Chronicles, but I don't know which Chronicles are which.
Well, here, we'll just type on the, hit the author.
Oh. Isn't the internet amazing?
Okay, the Legends. So, yeah, the Chronicles, then the Legends, which take place about 2 years after the Chronicles are over, and it's detailing Caramon and Raistlin and Tasselhoff after the end of the Chronicles. So, at the end of the Chronicles, your party has become the heroes of the Lance. They're celebrities.
Yeah.
They are the most famous heroes ever. Legends is about one of them becoming the dark mage Fistin Dantalus, and his brother going to try and save his soul. They're twins. Then they also wrote The Second Generation, which is about the children of the original heroes of the Lance. It's a collection of short stories, came out in 1994. Then we have Dragons of Summer Flame. So The Second Generation was the lead up to the Dragons of Summer Flame. You can't tell, Chronicles is the Dragons of Autumn Twilight, Winter Night, and Spring Dawning. So we have Summer Flame, which is another story about the end of the world and who is going to save the world. The children of the original heroes of the Lance. So instead of Sturm Brightblade and Kitiara Uthmatar, we have their son, Steel Brightblade, who's an evil knight of Tachesis, but still follows the honorific code of the Knights of Salamnia. You have Gilfanas, the son of Lorlan Thalassa and Tanis Half-Elven. You have Palin Majir, the son of Caramon Majir. Just so many fun things. Takes place, like you said, 20 to 30 years in the future. Very fun. Let's see. Then we have some singular novels. Then we go into the War of Souls. Dragons of a Fallen Sun. Dragons of a Lost Star. Dragons of a Vanished Moon. And again, this is another continuation. We're another 20 or 30 years in the future. We're dealing with the grandchildren of the original heroes of the Lance.
Hmm.
Or people that had maybe just knew of them or grew up in their shadows or whatever.
say, but as I recall, those are also, there's a lot of, like, weird, to steal a Doctor Who reference, timey-wimey things going on there, because isn't that the one where Tasselhoff is supposed to be crushed by a giant, and then...
At the end of Dragons of Summer Flame, 20 years beforehand, Tasselhoff was supposed to be crushed beneath the foot of a giant. But at the last minute, Tasselhoff remembered that he had a magical, mystical, wobbly, knobbly object. Deus
Machina kind of thing.
Yeah. That would allow him to transport times and places. So he goes into the future. To where he meets up with a knight and a, you know, and a mage and a blah, blah, blah.
A new party.
The whole, like, George Lucas always said that Star Wars was a story of the Galactic Civil War from the perspective of the droids. Mm. Everything in Dragonlance is based off of the perspective of Tasselhoff Burfoot. That's why everything is happy.
Yeah.
To an extent. I mean, there's sad parts. I've cried reading these books. There's scary parts. But in the end, everything is happy, and that's Tasselhoff. Yeah. At the end of the War of Souls trilogy, Tasselhoff does use his little time zapper, go back in time to the place right under the foot of the giant, and he does die in a tragic hero's death.
Right.
The only hero of Kender kind. Kender replacing hobbits in this world.
Right.
Because TSR did not have licensure to. Since hobbits were made up solely for Lord of the Rings, whereas dwarves and elves and things had been elements of fantasy for years, for decades. Yeah. TSR had to make up something to replace hobbits, which were the
Kender. I was saying that's a typical thing for like I said, coming from more of a D&D background. They have the, it's like with each sort of realm that they create, you know, Dragonlance, Ravenloft, Forgotten Realms, Eberron, all the stuff they come up with. Basically, what they do is they say, okay, here's our standard. It's all down to, you know, exact math, and everything's in order, and they all have their own, you know, particular attributes and pluses and minuses. And then when you build this new realm, you just transfer it over and you change some words around. But, you know, that core process is what everybody loves. So they keep the core process. They're like, well, we need, you know, just like you said, we need the hobbits, which are, you know, the halflings. You know, so now that we're going to go here, we're going to call them Kender. But they're all serving the same, you know.
Yeah, they're different, but they're the same.
Yeah.
So the War of Souls is over. Everything's better again. We go to the next set of Tracy Hickman and Margaret Weiss together, which is The Lost Chronicles, which is the story that takes place between the stories of the Dragonlance Chronicles. So, like, you ever read Shadows of the Empire?
Mm-hmm.
There's, like, 2 years in between Empire Strikes Back and The Return of the Jedi.
Right.
They sum it up in The Shadows of the Empire. This is what happens between the novels of the original Chronicles. So, you're going back with the original authors to the characters you first fell in love with 20 fucking years ago.
Right.
And you're getting to retell their stories in a different light, a different adventure, something you didn't know before. It's literally The Lost Chronicles. It's things that you didn't know existed before, because they can continue to do that for as long as they want.
Well, yeah.
But it was fucking magical, because at the end of the War of Souls, we thought it was all over. That was 2002.
Yeah.
So fanboys, we just had to, like, lay it to rest. Okay, it's over. Thank you for letting me read this. It was great. It was amazing. I mean, Dragonlance honestly taught me how to be a better man. You know what I mean? Like, Dragonlance led me to comic books, and comic books led me to where I am now. And it's like, all those, you read about heroes, and all that action, and that beauty, and everything in the world, and it makes you be a better man. And then they're like, in 2006, they're like, oh, Weiss and Hickman are at it again with Dragonlance. You're like, oh, son of a bitch! So, now it's been since 2009, it's been 5 years since they've had a Dragonlance book come out. They're probably really done now.
I would imagine so,
which is fine.
Say, it seems like that, I say, well, I don't know if I told you this or not. When I went to Gen Con last year, I actually got to meet and talk to Hickman for a while.
Shut the fuck up.
Yeah, I didn't know if we went over that or not.
I just wanted my reaction to be the same.
But
he comes to Indy pretty often. He came here for Dragon Con a couple times.
Yeah, no, it's
Gen Con every year.
It's his show, like, in a lot of ways. Like, he is very much, I mean, if you've got a drum major of Gen Con, Tracy Hickman is right up there with, you know, like, Will Wheaton and, you know, some of these other characters.
Wow, he just tied that into Marching Man, guys. That's look out true. For this one.
But, no, he's a fantastic guy, but it seems like he's definitely all of his novels. Like, you talk about the Batman novel. I bought a book from him. I don't remember what it's called now.
I stopped reading that Batman novel, chapter 4. I figured out the end. I stopped.
As I say, he and his wife are definitely pushing these other titles. They're pushing Laura, a game.
Yeah. Laura Hickman.
Yeah, they're pushing a game. They're doing some Kickstarting stuff.
They did a movie together, too, didn't they?
That, I don't know. It wouldn't surprise me. I mean, he's obviously a very creative guy, and he does a lot of stuff like that. And like I said, he loves that sort of Gen Con culture. So it would not surprise me at all. He has done some kind
of development of a movie. I know it. Keep talking, though. Sorry.
No, you're fine. See, I'm trying to figure out where to go here. But, no, he was an interesting guy to talk to. If you go to Gen Con next year, would you go? I'd say I'm sure he will be there, and, you know, he just
They've been doing a Dragon Hearth podcast since December 2005. Oh, my God!
You've been missing out on that.
Oh, my God!
No, he's
What the fuck is wrong with me?
He is great to talk to. He was so much fun.
Oh, I'm so jealous of you.
And he does this is, again, we should go.
Damn it, he's a Mormon. I knew it was too good to be true.
Officially Mormon? Or
Hickman began 2 years to serve as a missionary for the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints.
I knew he was from that area. I
didn't Fuck! Know that. That's all right. Fucking, that Twilight bitch is a Mormon, too. They're good. It's just so weird.
Just blown your mind by quick Wikipedia search there, huh?
Well, like his wife, Laura, that was the inspiration for Laura Lynn Thalassa. Like,
yeah.
The most beautiful woman in all of the Dragonlance world, and he made it his wife. Like, you gotta respect that. Fuck. You know what? I give up all of my preconceived notions about people with Mormonism. People with Mormonism. Like, it's a disease. People that happen to be Mormons. Sorry. God damn it.
I say, all the Mormons I've ever met, good people.
They're nice people. I just would like to have a cup of coffee, goddammit. Shit. And I don't want to wear magic like fucking underwear.
But yeah, no, they're doing their own projects. Like I said, they developed a board game that's supposed to be coming out. Like, he's all on that. And definitely go to his, he does breakfast, apparently. That's his big thing for Gen Con. He does breakfast.
I love breakfast.
And as I say,
I'm all about this.
He goes up and does a big old song and dance, and they serve food and everything. So he's totally into it. He loves the community, which is great.
These two, like, the fact that they found each other and came up with the story together is just so great, you know?
I was saying, but what's really interesting to me is that at the same time, like, it's not, we're not, this isn't, you know, this stuff isn't War and Peace. It's not, you know, it's not something that...
Yeah, this isn't going to be in your English class, no.
Yeah, but I was going to say, because like you said, that's an amazing, sweet thing that he named, you know, the beautiful elven princess after his wife. But at the same time, that's like something you do at the D&D table. You know, you're sitting down, and it's like, oh yeah, my wife Laura's going to play. And everyone's like, what are we going to call her? Oh, she'll be an elf. Laura, let's add some couple of syllables here. Okay, there's her character name. All right, let's go.
Like, every time I played Final Fantasy III, I didn't name every character after people I knew.
It's the Oregon Trail thing. It's all that Oregon Trail thing. That way you can look at your buddy in the computer lab and go, hey, what? You guess what? You died of dysentery.
Wow! Beautiful stuff. Such a shining, bright moment, and you're like, dysentery. Oh, they shit till they died. Bye-bye. Oh, well.
So, curious, so what's your favorite character then from the Chronicles? Who is your character?
I mean, like, I'm 31, okay? 30 fucking 1 years old. I can't read the Chronicles without crying when Skirm dies. And then I can't help but cry because Kitiara is the one that killed him, and she had his son, and I know that because I read Summer Flame. And then I'm like, my God, Tasselhoff is the hero.
Mm-hmm.
Because he literally transcends, and he is in all four trilogies.
Yeah.
God damn it, what do I choose? To the point that I just don't know. I love the group. I love the group so much. They all express different elements of my personality
right. That
I like. And they all express things I don't like about myself either.
Mm-hmm. See, they're very human characters.
They are.
I mean, they're archetypes, and they're completely, you know, see-through, but at the same time, they still touch on those. You're getting back to that D&D, you know, that core D&D experience, that core, we're still going to be, you know, good people, they're going to be bad people, we're going to fight, people are going to die, but again, it's all that human story, that role-playing thing, and it's a trope, and they've repeated it over and over and over and over again.
In every genre possible.
But they still do a great job. Still tell good stories.
So look, the history of the modern role-playing game is clearly Lord of the Rings, okay?
Yep.
That's why if you read Lord of the Rings, then you go and you play D&D, there's orcs and shit. Okay, I got it. Dragonlance is the next step, okay? It's the Picard to your Kirk. Go and check it out. Give the first trilogy a read. Dragons of Autumn Twilight, Dragons of Winter Night, Dragons of Spring Dawning. okay? It will teach you more about yourself than you ever knew. You will be a better person, a better man, a better wife, a better better husband, better wife.
There you go.
It just teaches you how to be a good person, much like modern era comic books does.
Yeah, I was saying, there. I mean, again, it's you look at any fiction, it's all the same stories over and over. The heroic tropes have been around for thousands of years, but we keep telling them because they teach good morals, they teach you good stories, they give you heroes to look up to.
And this is a really fucking fun way of reading those same stories.
Yeah, and I mean, I rag on these old TSR books and stuff like that because, like I said, they are literally a dime a dozen. But Weiss and Hickman are probably some of the best of the D&D writers. There are a lot out there. I mean, you've got Salvatore. Salvatore is a big name out there. You've got Greenwood, who did Elminster. You've got all these things. But Weiss and Hickman, they get the trope a little better. They tell a little bit better story than a lot of those other guys.
And look at it like the heroes of the kids today. They're fucking Edward Cullens and their Divergent series. These authors are writing a good trilogy, and then they're writing nothing else. That's awesome. These guys wrote trilogy after trilogy after trilogy, spawning an entire fucking universe. Imagine that. Imagine a Harry Potter universe. Not just seven stories, and then a couple of adult novels that were really weird. Okay? Imagine an entire universe of people telling your children and you how to be a good person, how to take care of the world, how to be a better man, a better woman. Okay? Go out and read this shit today. Damn it. And that concludes this week's diatribe about bullshit. No, I really love Dragonlance. If any of you do, too, let us know on the Facebook page or on Twitter, facebook.com/group/Rancor's Brothel. You can tweet us at the Rancor's Brothel. You can email me at matt@followthe.tv. Oh, what else? You can go to the youtube.com/followernetworks. You can go to www.followthe.tv and check out all of our shit. But Cody, it was great having you here today.
Oh,
thank you so
fun.
Much.
I look forward to doing it again sometime.
Yeah, come over every week. Fuck it, I don't care. Just every Sunday, come over and we'll do something. And that's it. So be safe, love one another, read Dragonlance.
Amen. Ha ha ha.